move to question time. Senator Hume.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam President. My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Minister Gallagher. On the 26th of July 2021, in a media release, the Prime Minister, along with the Treasurer, said Labor in government will...
Labor, Senator Watt.
Let me start again, Senator Watt.
I'm running the Senate, Senator Hume. I have called Senator Watt to order, and please continue your question.
An Albanese Labor government will deliver the same legislated tax relief to more than 9 million Australians as the Morrison government. The Shadow Cabinet and caucus have today confirmed that Labor and government will uphold the legislated changes to personal income taxes and maintain the existing regimes for negative gearing and capital gains tax. Minister, given you have already broken your promise to uphold legislative changes to personal income taxes, will you now categorically rule out any changes to negative gearing?
Thank you, Senator Hume. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. I was wondering where we were going to with that, where Senator Hume was outlining support for the policy that they now have changed their position
Minister
on.
Minister Gallagher, resume your seat. Senator Hume, withdraw. Senator Hume, you need to stand and withdraw. Thank you. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. And I might start by my answer by referring to the Deputy Opposition Leader Susan Lee's comments from yesterday, which was, you wouldn't expect me to pull out one ingredient or one part of tax reform, so I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to play the yes,
Minister
Gallagher, is good.
Minister
no,
Gallagher,
this is
please
bad.
Resume your seat. Senator Hume.
Thank you, Madam President. A point of order on relevance. I didn't ask about Ms Lee. I asked about a commitment that Labor made.
Thank you, Senator Hume. The Minister's just started her response, so I'll wait and see where it goes. Minister Wong.
On the point of order, I again make the point, the fact that someone else spoke about a topic does not mean a reference to that person renders the answer not directly relevant. And so I would submit to you on this occasion, on the topic that has been asked, Ms Lee is very relevant.
Thank you, Senator Wong. Order, as I order across the chamber, order. As I just indicated, Senator Hume, the minister has just started. I will continue to listen, and if the minister doesn't get to the standing parts of your question, I'll remind her. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Just to finish that, so I'm not going to play the yes, this is good, no, this is bad, the rule in, rule out. I'm not going to do that, which is exactly. So it's all right for the opposition not to have to do it, but for some reason, it's a game that they would like us to engage in. We have been very clear about the tax reform that we are bringing forward, a tax reform that you support, and we accept it must have killed you to adopt Labor tax policy. It must have killed you to accept that Labor's policy was better than yours, reached more people than stage three, was a fairer way of distributing that money.
Senator Hume.
President, on relevance, we've given her another minute. She hasn't mentioned the words negative gearing.
Thank you.
That's what the question's about.
Thank you, Senator Hume. The minister is being directly relevant to your question. Minister, did you wish to continue?
Thank you. We've been very clear on the tax reform that the government is undertaking. We have changed our position on income tax. You have changed your position on income tax. We have brought forward some sensible measures around superannuation. We have brought forward some sensible measures around PRRT. We are bringing forward some measures around multinational tax reform. And you want to talk about all the things we are not doing, because you don't want to talk about the things we are doing, because you support the things we are doing.
Order across the chamber. Order. Order across the chamber. I have one of your senators on her feet, Senator Smith. Senator Hume, first supplement.
Thank you, Madam President.
Order across the chamber.
Thank you, Madam President.
Please continue.
Minister,
Senator Hume, I'm sorry. Please resume your seat. Order. I've called order about four times. Senator McKenzie, I had Senator Hume on her feet, and she had started her Senator Wong, and she had started her question. I should not have had to sit her down. Senator Hume, please try again.
Thank you, Madam President. Minister, what is Labor's policy on negative gearing?
Minister Gallagher.
The law is very clear on what the negative gearing arrangements are. They remain in place. There is. There's legislative arrangements around negative gearing. But I would say I understand that those opposite want to constantly talk
Minister Gallagher, please
about
resume
anything.
Your seat. Minister, please resume your seat. Minister Gallagher, Senator Hume.
Thank you, Madam President. On relevance, I didn't ask what the law was. I asked what Labor's policy was.
I do appreciate that, Senator Hume, and the minister just got to her feet to begin to answer your question. So, Minister, please continue.
Well, I've answered the question, and I would like to just—I understand the desire not to speak about what the changes we are bringing to the parliament are. I understand that. I've answered the question. We understand it. First, you said you'd vote against it. Then you said you'd reverse it. Then you said you'd roll it back.
Minister
I know
Gallagher.
It's uncomfortable, Senator Birmingham. It's very uncomfortable.
Please resume your seat. Senator Birmingham.
Point of order, President. It goes to relevance on two fronts. I would contend the minister has not answered the question. Senator Hume's very narrowly worded question focused on what the government's policy is, not what the law is, but also point out that if the minister believes she's answered the question, that's then not an invitation to use the residual time to talk about whatever she wants. The answer still needs to be directly relevant to the question asked.
Did you want to make... Minister Wong, did you... I have a point of order.
Well, I was going to ask you to ask the clerk for advice whether or not the question of itself was in fact in order.
As the chamber would have seen, I did seek the advice of the clerk, and the question is out of order pursuant to Standing Order 73, because that says that you can't directly ask about specific government policy. So the minister is quite within her rights for a statement of policy. So the minister is quite within her rights to answer the question in whatever way she sees fit. So I've said Standing Order 73, Senator Hume, and I did seek the advice of the clerk. Minister, please continue.
Thank you. And the policy that we have brought before the parliament is the income tax policy. The income tax policy that you said you wanted to call an election on before you actually now in support of it. Before you said you were against it, before you even saw it, then you were going to reverse it, then you were going to roll it back. Then we saw the crab walking away when we realised, oh, wait on, we've looked in the tea leaves and this isn't going so well. And you adopted it. And now you want to talk about everything else.
Senator Hume, second supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. Minister, can you categorically rule out that Treasury has provided you with options to change Australia's negative gearing framework or capital gains framework after the call from your legislative partners, the Greens?
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, what I can confirm for Senator Hume is that this government remains completely focused on looking at ways to alleviate cost of living pressures on Australians, which is why we have brought the income tax changes to this parliament. That is the work that we are doing. That is the work we did over summer. That is the work we did in our first budget. That's the work we did in our second budget, in our MyEFO. It's
Minister
the work we
Gallagher,
did over summer when
Minister
your
Minister
boss
Gallagher,
was running around trying
seat.
To...
Thank you. Please resume your seat. Senator Hume.
On relevance, I mentioned negative gearing and capital gains. I did not mention cost of living, and I did not mention personal income taxes.
You did talk about advice from Treasury, so I think the minister is being relevant. Minister, please continue.
Thank you. I'm answering the question. You asked around the advice that the Treasury provides, and I told you that the government has sought advice and support from our departments around cost of living relief, and that's what you've seen flow through our budgets. It's what you voted against time after time, so no wonder your question didn't have cost of living in it, because you have voted against the cost of living measures when they have come here.
Senator Hume,
and we will work with departments to ensure that we can provide cost of living relief where we can and where we can responsibly afford to
do so.
Thank you,
Minister. Oh, I have Senator Polly.
My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Minister Wong. I note that the Prime Minister said that he wants Australians to, and I quote, earn more and keep more of what they earn, and that Labor's plan will deliver a tax cut to all Australians. Can you, the Minister, please explain why the Albanese Labor governments made the decision to tackle the cost of living pressures and deliver a tax cut to all Australians?
Thank you, Senator Polly. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President, and thank you to Senator Polly for that question. And cost of living relief is the highest priority of this government, is our top priority. And as of 1st of July this year, every Australian taxpayer will get to keep more of what they earn. That's 13.6 million Australians, because we are working. The Albanese government is working for every Australian. It's in Labor's DNA, unlike those opposite. These tax cuts offer relief and reform. More relief for workers, better reform for our economy. And Labor is doing the right thing for the right reasons. And Treasury is clear that the plan does not add to inflation. Labor's tax cut is backed by Treasury. It went through ERC, Cabinet, Ministry and Caucus. And unlike the last government, led by a Prime Minister with secret portfolios who govern for himself rather than all Australians. And, colleagues, it's clear things aren't that much better, aren't any better under Mr Dutton. After the government said it would deliver tax cuts, Senator Cash said they would, I quote, oppose tax cuts. Senator Birmingham said they were not going to be supporting Labor because their reflex is always to oppose, even if it means they are not supporting Australians. But, of course, if those opposite had considered the detail, the facts that Labor's plan benefits every single Australian taxpayer, that it puts more money into the pockets of hard-working Australians, then maybe the Leader of the Opposition wouldn't have been so humiliated on national television last night. Wouldn't have been so humiliated on a national television last night. I mean, the reason the opposition have had to support these tax cuts is they know in their heart of heart it's the right thing to do. They know Labor has done the right thing. They know Labor's tax cuts will deliver a bigger tax cut for more Australians, and more Australians
Thank
will
you,
be
Minister,
better off
the time
as a result.
For answering has expired. Senator Polly, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Can the Minister please inform the Senate on who in my home state of Tasmania will be better off because of Labor's tax plan?
Thank you, Senator Polly. Minister Wong.
I thank Senator Polly for her question. She, of course, is one of a great Tasmanian Senate team for Labor. And they all know that every single taxpayer in Tasmania around the country are better off as a result of this tax cut. We'll be better off. And in fact, in Senator Polly's home state of Tasmania, 9 in 10 taxpayers will receive a bigger cut than they would have under the Morrison government's policies. 9 in 10. 280,000 people will pay less tax than they are now. And we know hard-working women are likely to learn. We know hard-working women are likely to earn less. And in Tasmania, about 140,000 women will get a tax cut. 94% of them more than they would have under the Morrison-Dutton plan. So I'd say to Senator Dunham and Senator Chandler and Senator Colbeck and Senator Askew, why is it that our Senate team can do so much more for Tasmanians and particularly Tasmanian women
than you
ever could?
Senator Polly, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister.
Order,
thank you, Minister.
Order. Order across the chamber. Particularly on my left, Senator Dunham. Senator Polly, second supplementary.
Thank you. Can the minister please tell the Senate how the Albanese government listens and responds to Australians across a range of issues, including the cost of living?
Minister Wong.
Thank you. Thank you, President. And I thank the Senator, who, like all members of the Albanese government, is engaged with her community. Meanwhile, I have to say the response from those opposite shows they clearly don't listen, although we already know this. They didn't listen at the last election to those many Australians who demanded action on climate change at the last election, and certainly Senator Canavan is still not listening. There are those who choose a bit of conspiracy in echo chambers over evidence and listening. And on Monday night, more of the Liberals' and National self-serving attitudes were exposed. Mr Turnbull said the former government treated Australia as a plaything. Senator Reynolds said people were blackmailed and threatened into supporting Mr Dutton, and Mr Morrison said that Mr Dutton was seen as a great intolerant threat to the moderates. Well, I don't think we have to say much more than what they say about themselves. We on this side, we do the right thing for the right reasons, and we always will.
Order. Senator Shoebridge, I don't have you on my list. I have Senator Canavan, but I'm happy for the whips to tell me differently. Yeah, Senator Canavan.
Thank you, Madam President. Unfortunately, Penny, my question is not to you, but my question is to the Minister for Finance, Senator Gallagher. Minister, on the 28th of November 2022, in response to Senator Macdonald, you said that the government has no plans for a mining tax. The Prime Minister has been very clear on that. The Treasurer has been clear on that. And on the 8th of February 2023, the Prime Minister ruled out any change to the fuel tax credit scheme in question time. Considering both the Prime Minister and the Treasurer have repeatedly reassured Australians that they had no plans to change the Stage 3 tax cuts and then broke that promise, how long will it be before you betray the trust of the Australian people again and introduce a mining tax or undermine the fuel credit tax scheme?
Thank you, Senator Canavan. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President, and I thank Senator Canavan for the question. And again, I think there is an obvious reason why they don't want to talk about the change that we have brought forward on tax. The change that the Parliament will be considering, the one that the House has been considering, and indeed the one that you have adopted. And by adopting that policy, you have accepted that it was the right thing to do to change our position, that it was a fairer way of applying those tax cuts, that it got to more people, bigger tax cuts to more people, and everyone gets a tax cut. And you have accepted that as your policy. And by doing so, you now want to talk about everything that we are not doing. And the Prime Minister has fronted up and he has explained to the Australian people why he has changed his mind. Why he has changed his mind, why the government has changed our mind to ensure that the tax cuts reach more people and that the average taxpayer gets a much bigger tax cut, that 90% of women get a bigger tax cut when they're paying tax, that 100% of women taxpayers get a tax cut, and you want to talk about other things. We have a full book of tax reform. How about you work with us? Yeah, on super.
Order.
You find us. You work with us on super, on PRRT,
Minister Gallagher, on multinational please resume your tax seat. Minister Gallagher, please resume your seat. Senator Wong. Thank you. I have sat the minister down, waiting for the chamber to come to order. Senator McGrath.
I would ask the minister to table the full book on tax
McGrath,
reform.
Please resume your seat. Order. Minister, please continue.
You opposite are an absolute rabble. If that's the best you can do, an absolute rabble to channel one of our former colleagues. The tax reform we have brought to this parliament that you refuse to deal with are the reforms that the government has on our agenda. That is what they are. You want to talk about all the things we are not doing that are not proposals by this government.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Canavan, first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. Minister, as part of the same answer in November 2022 that I referred to in the first question, you told the chamber that we are not a government that breaks promises. Will you repeat your promise and prior statements not to introduce a mining tax and rule out any change to the fuel tax credit scheme?
Thank you, Senator Canavan. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. So the opposition deputy leader yesterday, and I will again start my answer by that, I'm not going to play the yes, this is good, no, this is bad, the rule in, the rule out. I'm just not going to do it. You wouldn't expect me to pull out one ingredient or one part of tax reform. You are so clearly embarrassed by the position you have taken, by the backflip, by adopting our policy, that you're scrapping around, looking in that drawer for scare campaigns of what next, because you've actually had to capitulate and accept that our policy on tax is the better policy. When it comes to tax reform, I have been clear. We have income tax reform. We have multinational tax reform. We have high balance super accounts reform. We have PRRT reform. Those reforms are before the parliament. That is the government's tax reform agenda. You might want to talk about all the things we're not doing because you're so embarrassed about the fact that the decision we took was
the
right one.
The time has expired. Order. I haven't called you yet, Senator Canavan. I'm sorry, I'm just waiting for quiet. Senator Canavan, second supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. I haven't heard a single commitment to not change the fuel tax credit scheme in two answers. So, Minister, could you reassure the 1.1 million people who work directly or indirectly in the resources sector, or the millions more who work and rely on our farmers, that you will not break yet another promise and introduce a mining tax or change the fuel tax credit scheme?
Thank you, Senator Canavan. Minister
Gallagher. I have been clear, Senator Canavan. I don't think I can be clearer. You were all yelling at me, so maybe you didn't hear. Maybe you didn't hear. I explained what the government's tax reform agenda is, some of which you've adopted, others of which you are blocking. And the rule in, rule out game is fine for everybody else, but not for you. We have been very clear what our tax reform
is, Senator Hume, you are yelling across the chamber, so much so that I am having to substantially raise my voice to get order. You are being disorderly. I'm asking you to stop doing it. Minister, please continue.
The measures that have been raised here by Senator Hume and Senator Canavan are not and do not form part of the government's tax agenda. That is very clear, very clear answer for all of you that can't quite seem to grapple with it. It can't quite seem to understand. Our tax reforms in the parliament include income tax, PRRT, high balance super accounts and multinational tax reform. It's all there for people to see. We've been up front. We've explained the position. Yes, we have, Senator McGrath. You might not understand it, or you might not want to understand it.
Minister, the time for answering has expired. Senator Shoebridge.
Thanks, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Defence. Minister, Australian exports that end up in Israel, whether it's parts of F-35 fighter planes, engines for drones used by the IDF, material for vehicle armour, or any other number of types of military equipment, risk being used to carry out genocide. Furthermore, your own department's recently released figures show that even in October of 2023, Australia provided further arms and ammunition to the State of Israel. The International Court of Justice found there's a plausible case of genocide being committed by the State of Israel on the population of Gaza. Following this finding, why has your government not publicly and clearly announced an urgent ban on the export of military equipment to Israel?
Thank you, Senator Shoebridge. Minister Wong.
There are a number of assertions in that question, President, to you, Senator Shoebridge, I might respond to. The first on the ICJ, and I would refer you to my answer to Senator Faruqi yesterday, where I referenced the joint statement with New Zealand in relation to the findings of the Court of Justice and the expectation that Australia has articulated that Israel will comply with the findings and the statements of that court. The second point I would make is, and I appreciate you asked that in it with slightly better tone on this occasion, that I do think there's been a lot of misinformation and disinformation, some of which was included in your question, in a debate which has seen some of the worst social disharmony in our country in many years, certainly since I can remember. And everyone in this chamber, including the Greens, have a responsibility to deal with differences of opinion which are very deeply felt in ways which are respectful, which do not rely on disinformation, misinformation and false facts.
Order.
Excuse me.
Order.
This is an example of the lack of ability to have a discussion with some courtesy about the Middle East. This is really an example. The fact that you are interjecting when I'm responding to you is another example of it. And we have seen the sorts of vitriol on social media, the sorts of falsehoods which are stated, some of which this party repeats in this chamber. I would have hoped a progressive party might actually prioritise social harmony in these times. You're entitled to your views. You know, in a democracy.
Order!
I have seen some of what people have said, including those in this chamber, where you know it to be false. You know it to
Thank
be
you,
false.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Shoebriggs, supplementary.
Minister, following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, you prohibited the export of aluminium to Moscow as it formed, to quote you, key components in the manufacture and development of weapons. Yet under the Albanese government, Australia continues to export millions of dollars of aluminium to the State of Israel, which recent reports by Israeli media made clear are being used in the manufacturing of domestic weapons. Why haven't you publicly prohibited the export of aluminium and other materials that can be used to make weapons to the State of Israel, given there's a plausible case of genocide?
Minister Wong.
Thank you. Can I first reiterate, because I didn't get a chance in the first answer, what the government has made clear and I have made clear in this chamber on numerous occasions. Australia has not supplied weapons to Israel since the conflict began and for at least the past 5 years. It was an answer to the first question, Senator, and notwithstanding the fact that you assert something else publicly, Senator Shoebridge, it is the answer that is I am advised by departments. In relation to the second, this is where there is a difference between the government and the Greens. You know, we do not have a policy of boycotting all exports to Israel. Now, I appreciate that is the position that you are seeking, but we do not have a policy of disengaging from Israel economically. Now, I appreciate you have a different view.
Senator Shoebriggs, if you wish to take note of a question, you have that opportunity after question time. And indeed, you have estimates next week. When you've asked your question, I ask that you listen in respectful silence and not keep constantly interjecting. Please continue. Oh, Minister, sorry, time has expired. So, second supplementary, Senator Shoebriggs.
Yeah, thanks, President. Following allegations from the State of Israel concerning less than 0.1% of UNRWA members that are no longer in the organisation, your government almost immediately and publicly withdrew integral funding, endangering the lives of thousands and thousands of innocent Palestinians. Why is the Albanese government so willing to take actions that harm Palestinians based on allegations from the Israeli government, yet you're not willing to take any decisive actions to protect Palestinians after the ICJ found a plausible case of genocide?
Minister Wong, please answer the questions.
I wonder if Senator Shoebridge issued a press release welcoming the doubling of the core funding of UNRWA when Labor did that.
Probably not.
Did Senator Faruqi or any of the Greens issue a press release congratulating us, recognising how important that was? Welcoming that. Did you do that? No, because your focus is how you use this conflict to extract
Wong,
votes.
Please resume
and it
your
is
seat. Minister Wong, please resume your seat. Senator Shoebridge. Order. Senator Shoebridge.
The minister is not being responsive. It is question
time. Senator Shoebridge, do you have a point of order?
The point of order is that the minister is not being relevant. She's out of order asking questions rather than providing answers.
I will listen carefully to the rest of the minister's questions, response, but Minister Wong, please continue.
I said yesterday, in answer to a question from Senator Faruqi, there are, I think, two irrefutable facts in relation to UNRWA. One is it is necessary in order to deliver aid, humanitarian support to in the occupied Palestinian territories and, in particular, in Gaza at this time. Absolutely, which is why we increased the funding. The second irrefutable fact is that serious allegations have been made. And I spoke yesterday with the chief of UNRWA, about what measures can be taken to resolve this issue.
Thank you, Minister. Because we are being constructive. The time for answering has expired. Senator Walsh.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Health, Senator Gallagher. How will health workers and their patients benefit from Labor's tax cuts? How is this building on the measures already introduced by the Albanese government to help make healthcare affordable for all Australians?
Thank you, Senator Walsh. Minister Gallagher.
Thanks very much, President. I thank Senator Walsh for the question and for the work she does as an advocate for the people of Victoria and in particular care economy workers across her state. There are more than 650,000 health workers in Australia, nurses, doctors, allied health workers and more, and every day they work hard, turn up, work a hard day to keep us all healthy and safe. During the worst times of the pandemic, as we all knew, in this place they worked hard to keep us safe, often placing themselves in danger to do so. Our government wants Australian workers to earn more, and we want them to keep more of what they earn. And that's why on the 1st of July, Labor will deliver every single health worker in Australia a tax cut to help with the cost of living, not just to some of them, but to every single one of those 650,000 health workers. A typical nurse earning $76,000 a year will receive a tax cut of $1,579, around double what they would have earned from the old plan of 5 years ago. Every single one of their patients who's paying tax will receive a tax cut as well. Not just some of them, but every single one of them, reinforcing our determination to build on the measures we rolled out over the course of last year to help middle Australia with cost of living pressures. We're also taking a range of actions to make healthcare more affordable for Australians. Under Labor's Medicare urgent care clinics are making it easier for people to get the urgent treatment they need when they need it without having to pay for it. Senator Walsh will be happy to hear that the doctors and nurses across Victoria have responded to almost 66,000 presentations across the 10 urgent care clinics in Victoria. There have been more than 150,000 presentations to the 58 Medicare urgent care clinics now open and seeing patients across Australia, taking pressure off emergency department and saving over $42.5 million in avoided patient episodes.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Walsh, first supplementary.
Minister, Labor created Medicare to make Australia's health system cheaper, simpler and fairer. Labor knew then, like we know now, that Australians need a government that understands the impact healthcare can have on the family budget. 40 years on, why is it important to strengthen Medicare? And what is the Albanese government doing to ensure Medicare remains strong?
Thank you, Senator Walsh. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Walsh for her question and again for the work she's doing in Victoria around ensuring more accessible access to Medicare services for the Victorian community. It's true, this year we celebrate 40th birthday of Medicare, and before Medicare, one in seven Australians didn't have health coverage, and unpaid medical bills were the leading cause of personal bankruptcy in this country. Thanks to that landmark Labor reform, we now live in a country that has a healthcare system that's number one in the world when it comes to health outcomes and when it comes to equity. Bulk billing rates were in free fall when we came to government, and that's why we tripled the bulk billing incentive in last year's budget. That's not only stopped the slide in bulk billing rates. In the first 2 months, we saw an additional 360,000 additional free visits to the doctor. Senator Walsh, in Victoria, Victorians have saved almost 3 million.
Minister Gallagher, resumed your seat. Senator Wong.
Can Senator Rustin please withdraw that?
Minister, I didn't hear it, but I'm sure Senator Rustin. Thank you, Senator Rustin. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. $3 million due to this policy with an extra 71,000 visits.
Minister, the time for answering has expired. Senator Walsh, second supplementary.
Minister, since coming to government, Labor has made medicines cheaper, opened 58 Medicare urgent care clinics, and tripled the Medicare bulk billing incentive. How will Labor's cost of living tax cuts complement these measures and strengthen Medicare?
Thank you, Senator Walsh. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you very much. And I thank Senator Walsh for the question because, as she outlined in that question, the cost of living tax cuts do complement the other investments we are making in a whole range of areas, but in relation to the question to strengthen Medicare, whether it be the tripling of the bulk billing incentive, whether it be the urgent care clinics that are up and running, or whether it be the cheaper medicines. And we've seen patients have saved $240 million in medicine costs thanks to the biggest cut of the price of medicines in the 75-year history of the PBS. In 4 weeks' time, 100 more medicines will be added to the 60-day script list, saving Australian patients even more money at the pharmacist. And in Victoria, Victorians have saved $63 million due to the co-payment reductions on script. This is, again, real money left in the pockets of the Australian people so that they have more money to spend on the things that they need.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Tyrrell.
My question is for the Minister representing the Minister for Aged Care, Senator Gallagher. In December 2022, the government introduced a star rating system for aged care facilities. The idea was to provide accessible and reliable information about the quality of aged care. Recently, it has been reported that experts have criticised the system, claiming that it's a poor functioning system, resulting in high rankings for potentially substandard facilities. They say the data provided by aged care facilities is not vetted or checked thoroughly, meaning it isn't accurate. Minister, do you believe that Australians can rely on this system to ensure they or their loved ones receive the best quality aged care?
Thank you, Senator Tyrrell. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, and I thank Senator Tyrrell for the question and for her ongoing advocacy around aged care and residents of aged care, and in particular residents of aged care in Tasmania. I would say that the Minister for Aged Care, through her reform agenda, is working incredibly hard to improve the standard of care across the aged care system. And remember, we did inherit a system that had been heavily criticised under a Royal Commission with a report that was titled Neglect. And that report outlined the fact that the system was under enormous pressure, that there wasn't adequate investment into that system, and that the system needed to change. And it needed to change in a number of ways. We needed to ensure that appropriate investments were made into the workforce. We have done that. We also needed to make sure that there was more accountability and transparency around the care that is provided and the quality and the care minutes in particular that residents receive, and that people should and those aged care facilities should have to measure, I guess, the quality of the care that they provide in a very public way, which is what the star rating system is about. And I would say when you introduce those kind of rating systems, it's about actually driving improvements more than about punishment, because people, services will work hard to improve the star rating that they get in order to project, you know, the quality of care and therefore attract residents to that service. And it also gives families and resident or would-be residents information about those services that are either exceeding or going to a higher level of the quality of care, because I think anyone that needs to go into aged care, their families are always looking for the best possible place for the best possible care for their loved ones, and I think the star rating drives that kind of reform.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Tyrrell, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Across the four criteria that are assessed for a star rating, resident experience counts towards one third of the overall rating. However, an assessment can be determined by using as little as 10% of the residents. This means that the provider could potentially rig the assessments by choosing which residents participate in the survey. Minister, is it possible that ratings are being manipulated through the use of dodgy data?
Thank you, Senator Tyrrell. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Look, I will come back if there's anything further that I can add to this, Senator Tyrrell. I would say that when you introduce a system, it's always appropriate that you look at how that system is being implemented and you ensure that the data being used is appropriate and reflects the true picture. And it's not only star ratings, it's also, I think, through the Aged Care Quality and Safety Authority, the ability to do other and further checks and also respond to any complaints that are made. I would say in aged care, there, you know, some of the reasons around the threshold of the number of residents that might participate in that survey would be lower, potentially because of the nature of the care requirements of some of the residents. But I think, you know, it is an important part of the star rating system. But nobody, I think, in aged care, and I've met a lot of providers and a lot of families over the years would be wanting to see a system that didn't provide an accurate representation of the quality of care in those facilities. And if there is anyone that you're worried about, we'd be happy to follow up.
Your time has expired. Senator Tyrrell, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. The latest Aged Care Quality and Safety Commission performance report shows that nearly one in five residential aged care services were less than fully compliant. Yet many of these services are still receiving 4- and 5-star compliance ratings in the star rating system. Minister, does the government admit this system is a failure and putting people at risk?
Thank you, Senator Tyrrell. Minister Gallagher.
No, I wouldn't accept that, and the government wouldn't accept that. I think it is an important area of improving transparency and accountability across the residential aged care sector. But it is a new system, and I think, you know, where we are getting feedback, that feedback should be looked at and assessed to see if there is anything to that. I have noticed that it wasn't, and these you can see where star ratings have been applied in other areas of public information. It is much more about driving improvements rather than penalising and punishing. That's the whole idea of introducing one, and it sits alongside other quality measures that are required for the aged care sector. But look, we accept that the standard of care in aged care hasn't been what Australian people expected, what elderly Australians expect and should receive, and the sector is under enormous reform, but I am confident the work of the Minister, aged care providers and the Department, that we will get there.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Dunham.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for the Environment, Senator Wong. And last month, in one of the most scathing federal court judgments in memory, Justice Natalie Charlesworth found that the actions of the Environmental Defenders Office and its team were severely lacking in integrity, that they distorted and misrepresented and confected evidence. They manipulated and coached a number of traditional owners in the Mankara and Santos case, especially after all of the warnings that it was given, the government was given, about the problems, including green lawfare and social and economic devastation that it would trigger. Does the Albanese Labor government finally now concede that its October 2022 budget decision to supply $8.3 million to the EDO was a terrible, terrible waste of taxpayers' money?
Thank you, Senator Dunham. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. Thank you to Senator Dunham for the question and Justice Charlesworth's comments speak for themselves. I was trying to meet your eyes. Well, Senator Wish Wilson, I don't think anybody, regardless of their political persuasion, can suggest that some of the actions which were commented on by the judge are appropriate. So I do take that view. I understand that the minister has written to the CEO of the EDO, making clear that the expectation is that the office act ethically and professionally, and that the minister has asked her department to ensure that the EDO's conduct is in accordance with their grant agreement.
Senator Dunham, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Slap on the wrists. During question time on the 28th of November last year, Minister, you responded to my question on the fact that the EDO was engaging in claim farming and was exploiting consultation processes by saying that, if it was the case, quote, they should be brought to the attention of the legislature and the executive. Minister, the legislature was bypassed in the approval of funding for this organisation, and the judiciary has slammed, as you've just mentioned, the EDO's dreadfully unethical practices. So I ask the executive, through you, will the government now cease funding this terrible organisation?
Thank you, Senator. Minister Wong, first up.
I again simply refer back to my earlier answer, which is that I am advised that the minister has asked the secretary of her department to ensure that the EDO's conduct is in accordance with their grant agreement. And obviously the government will receive their advice. The government will receive that advice, and the government will consider that and the matters to which you revert.
Senator Dunham, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. This organisation is holding up dozens of projects, putting at risk thousands of jobs of hard-working men and women across the country. Will the minister inform the Senate and Australians why this government won't cut funding to this organisation now?
Minister Wong.
I have responded previously on the principle of...
Order. Order. Order.
I've responded previously on the principle about why legal services or grants are made to legal organisations. It's organisations.
Order across the chamber. Order across the chamber. The minister is on her feet answering Senator Dunningham's questions, and there's chatter across the chamber. I've asked you to come to order. Minister, did you have more to add?
Thank you. Yes, I've responded previously, Senator Dunningham, to your earlier questions prior to this case about the principles which underlie a government funding an organisation, even whether or not we agree with the organisation, but in a system where there is the rule of law that enables appropriate actions to be considered. What we have now is a judgment with some substantial criticism of the EDO by Justice Charlesworth, as I've informed the Senate, the Minister has asked her department to provide advice about whether or not
the
EDO's conduct is in accordance with the grant agreement.
Senator Babette.
Thank you, President. My question is for the Minister representing the Treasurer, Minister Gallagher. Minister, we pay around a third of the price of our fuel is tax, around a third of it. A fuel excise of 49.6 cents per litre, on top of this, 17.9 cents per litre in GST. And that GST is also charged on the fuel excise amount, essentially it's a tax on a tax, so to speak. Now, is it fair that hard-working Australians are being slugged with what is really a double tax, Minister, when they go to the fuel bowser?
Thank you, Senator Babette. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, I know there's a lot of opinions about what is fair and what is unfair when it comes to tax arrangements, but the fuel excise arrangements have been a long-standing line of revenue that essentially goes to fund states and territories' road infrastructure. And you can look through the tax arrangements across government to see where raising revenue then goes on to deliver services and infrastructure. So that is an important reason behind the fuel excise. Under those arrangements, there are standard indexation arrangements that are applied, which come into effect. But we also need to ensure that the transport infrastructure, that the roads and services that are needed are able to be funded. They're the arrangements that are in place. We haven't changed them. The last reduction, I think, ended in September 2022 when the Liberal former government legislated for those arrangements to end. And whilst, I think a lot of people come forward with ideas about where you could cut taxes or reduce revenue to government, there's also a growing and increasing need to provide services and make investments across government. And the top five of them, of course, are dealing with the increasing interest charges on the debt that we inherited, on aged care, in NDIS, in defence, those are the fast, and in health, they are very fast-growing areas of government. And governments need to collect revenue to fund those. If we don't collect it, then you have to start cutting back on those services. And I can't see in any of those five areas opportunity to cut investments.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Babette, first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Now, the funds generated by the fuel excise, obviously some of it goes into general revenue. We all know that one. But what percentage of these funds goes towards road infrastructure specifically?
Thank you, Senator Babette. Minister Gallagher.
Look, I'll come back if there's more information that I could provide, but it's over $1 billion was credited in the 21-22 year for the fuel indexation road funding special account for payments to states and territories. So that is, and then of course we fund other infrastructure arrangements with states and territories, including road infrastructure through other investments through the infrastructure portfolio as well. But that is the standard arrangement. I think everyone realises that, revenue going into consolidated revenue goes to fund all of those other areas that the federal government is responsible for, whether it be defence, whether it be immigration or home affairs, whether it be cyber security, whether it be in aged care or health or environment, or, you know, there's no shortage of areas where there's vying competition for funds out of consolidated revenue. And, you know,
thank
more
you, Minister, the time for answering has expired. Senator Babette, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Now, obviously, you're pursuing a net zero agenda and your government sees electric cars as a key component of that transition. But with more and more EVs on our roads, is it fair that these EV owners do not pay any fuel tax or equivalent tax? What is the government going to do to ensure that EV owners pay their fair share for all those services that you've just talked about? Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Senator Babette. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. And I understand, you know, some state treasurers have been keen to discuss matters around that with the federal government, and I'm sure those, you know, discussions will continue. But, you know, we are pursuing a net zero, and we're pursuing net zero not only for the improvements that it will bring for future generations, it's also about seizing the economic opportunities that come with that transformation that's happening around the world. And as much as many people in this chamber would like to put their head in the sand over it, it's happening. It's happening in global markets, it's happening in the money markets, it's happening across the board.
Senator McKenzie.
And we think Australia should be a part of that, and we should be ready to seize the economic opportunities that come with that transformation, whether it be in jobs, whether it be in exports,
and
certainly for future generations, the improvement in energy and reliability.
Senator Sheldon. Senator Sheldon, please resume your seat. Senator Rennick, I've called you about four times. At Senator McKenzie, equally. Order. Senator Sheldon.
Yeah, thank you, President. My question is to the Minister for Trade and Tourism, Senator Farrell. Tourism is vital to communities across Australia, particularly in regional economies, where hundreds of thousands across the country are employed in that industry, including in my home state of New South Wales. And workers in the industry who keep the industry going are often on lower and middle incomes. Can the Minister outline the Senate how Labor cost of living tax cuts will help workers in Australia's tourism and hospitality industry?
Thank you, President. And can I thank Senator Shorten, both for the great work he does in New South Wales as a New South Wales Senator, but for the particular interest that he takes in the tourism industry. Under Labor's, and I can answer this question, under Labor's tax cuts, every Australian taxpayer gets a cut. That's 13.6 million Australians from the 1st of July with more money in their pockets. In fact, President, in Senator Sheldon's home state of New South Wales, 83% of taxpayers will receive an even bigger tax cut. And 83%, Senator White. Yep, 83%. And many of those getting bigger tax cuts will be the hundreds of thousands of Australians who work in the tourism industry. The tourism sector supports Australian jobs in a range of industries, from accommodation and food services to the arts to recreation, aviation and events. That includes the cleaners in hotels in Sydney, waiters at restaurants in Melbourne, tour guides in national parks like Kakadu, boat crews on our Great Barrier Reef, and cellar door staff at fantastic wineries in South Australia. Many, many young Australians work in the tourism industry, and Labor's tax cuts are good news for them, with 1.5 million Australians aged 18 to 24 benefiting from the average tax cut of $1,007. And more than half, 55% of workers in tourism jobs are women who, under the Labor tax cuts, are going to be an average of $1,649 a year better off. President, Australian tourism industry and its workers have done it tough in recent years.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Sheldon, first supplementary.
Could I thank the minister for your answer? And to think that 83% of taxpayers will be better off is going to make a real difference to cost of living pressures. Can the minister update the Senate on what other work the Albanese government, Labor government is doing to support the tourism industry, including to grow and strengthen the industry's workforce?
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thanks, Senator Sheldon, for his first supplementary question. Our support for the industry is being delivered across government, and Labor's tax cuts, putting money back into the pockets of tourism workers, are just the beginning. And that's going to help too. That's going to help too, Senator McKenzie. No, that's going to help too. It's going to help boost jobs and boost incomes, as well as the tax cuts. The Albanese Labor government is delivering on our $48 million tourism support package to help it recover from the impacts of the COVID pandemic. We've delivered the Choose Tourism program to attract more workers to the sector, where they will now get a bigger tax cut thanks to this government. We've also funded Tourism Australia's to roll out the $125 million Come and Say Good Day campaign, and funded the Reviving International Tourism Package, reconnecting industry with key
thank you,
international
Minister Farrell,
markets.
The time has expired. Senator Sheldon, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. It's fantastic to hear that the Labor's tax cuts will deliver much-needed support for tourism workers, now, including those in tropical North Queensland, who have been hit hard by cyclones Jasper and Kirrily. Can the minister update the Senate on any other measures the Albanese government has taken to support the tourism workers and industry in tropical North Queensland in the wake of these disasters?
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thanks, Senator Sheldon, for his second supplementary question. And our government is working closely with the Queensland government to support tropical North Queensland, where tourism is a vital part of the local economy, as Senator Watt would know, and of course Senator Green would know that very well. Eligible operators can now apply for a $10 million Tourism Exceptional Assistance Grants program aimed at businesses suffering exceptional impacts due to flooding caused by Tropical Cyclone Jasper. We're also supporting discounted flights, vouchers and a major campaign launched on Saturday to market tropical North Queensland holidays. These are just some of the support measures that we are delivering to help tourism businesses in tropical North Queensland and get through
Thank
the
you, Minister,
tough
the
times.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Chandler.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Senator Wong. In Senate estimates last June, the Coalition raised questions about education materials promoting anti-Semitism, glorification of violence and martyrdom being used in UNRWA schools. DFAT told the committee it had made representations to UNRWA about its neutrality and that, quote, UNRWA has contractual obligations written into its contracts requiring it to undertake due diligence and risk management activities. We work with them on governance mechanisms to ensure that they comply with that. Australia assesses UNRWA's performance yearly. Minister, how did you assure yourself that UNRWA had met its contractual obligations to not allow funds to support terrorism and extremism before you authorised the full $20 million to be paid by January 2024?
Thank you, Senator Chandler. Minister Wong.
thank you, President. The first point I'd make to the Senator is that UNRWA has been funded by Australian governments of both stripes since 1951. And is also funded by our closest partners, the United States, the United Kingdom and Canada. And we also know, and this is relevant, that currently about 1.4 million Palestinians are sheltering in UNRWA facilities. Thousands of its staff are involved in the humanitarian response. I would make the point that the government, As I said in estimates, or as DFAT said in estimates, that we have agreements with UNRWA that prohibit Hamas or any other terrorist organisations from receiving funding. These requirements are closely monitored and applied by DFAT. I also would say to you, and I'll provide further information when I find it, that a further consideration by the department did occur in the context, I think, of the 22-23 budget. What I would say to you is this, that there are two very clear facts about UNRWA. The first is that UNRWA is needed, is the only organisation capable of delivering assistance into the occupied, into Gaza. And in a context where you have 400,000 Palestinians starving, a million facing starvation, and 1.7 million people displaced, that does matter. Another irrefutable fact is that serious allegations have been raised, which is why the government has paused funding and is engaging with UNRWA and with partners, including in the context of the investigations.
Thank you, Minister.
Which
the time for answering has expired. Senator Chandler, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, reports of UNRWA staff members participating in the holding of Israelis taken hostage by Hamas on the 7th of October were public in December 2023. On the 19th of December, the Australian Jewish community wrote to you and the Prime Minister warning that UNRWA had been aiding and abetting Hamas, including during the horrific October 7 attacks. In early January, UN Watch released extensive materials showing UNRWA staff celebrating the terror attacks. Minister, what assessment did you undertake of this evidence and these warnings before announcing an additional $6 million for UNRWA on the 16th of January?
Thank you, Senator Chandler. Minister.
Thank you. Can I first go back to the question, in the question that was first raised. I can advise that I received advice on UNRWA from my department last year prior to the disbursement of Australia's core funding for 23-24, and the advice to me based on an independently audited review was that there was no evidence that that funds had been diverted and that our key partners, including the United States, United Kingdom and Canada, who all fund UNRWA, held the same view. In relation to the letter of community representatives, I would make the point, I am aware of that letter. I do know these are not new views, that there are views that have been expressed for many years by individuals and organisations who do not support the Australian government continuing to fund UNRWA. By the time we received the letter, my officials had already acted on the issues it raised, which had been identified in a November report by UN Watch, as you said, and the Institute for Monitoring Peace and Cultural Tolerance and School Education.
Senator Chandler, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, your department told the committee last June, we are working with governance mechanisms to ensure that our funding goes to the right people. In October last year, you announced a total of an extra $25 million for humanitarian assistance in Gaza and the region, of which $12 million was to go to unnamed UN agencies or trusted partners to address needs. How much of this funding went to UNRWA, and how does the provision of aid through other UN agencies tally with the government's assertion that funding UNRWA is the only way to provide aid to the people of Gaza?
Senator, your time has expired. Minister.
I'll provide information about the October announcement. My recollection, it was UN organisations, including UNICEF and also the International Committee of the Red Cross, but I will confirm the detail of that with you. Senator Chandler, I don't believe it is disputed that at this point, where we are in Gaza, that the UNRWA is the only entity on the ground with at scale able to deliver aid and humanitarian relief. The Israeli government officials with whom I spoke would accept that. It may be that people don't like the entity, and I appreciate that that is where you are coming from, but I don't think it is disputed that there is no other organisation that is capable of delivering the assistance in that way. That is consistent with the discussions I had in Israel, consistent with the discussions I have had with officials of the UN and also the International Red Cross.
Thank you, Minister.
And on that basis, I ask that further questions be placed on the record.
Thank you.